Inspiring conversations for the modern man. The Evolving Man Podcast.
Trevor Boehm, thank you for coming on my show, man. This has been a long time coming. I wanted to introduce you to my listeners because I think you and I have kind of been circling around each other a little bit. Gravitational pull. We're both around the same sun, you know. We're both working in the men's workspace, right? Mm. And it is about time that we meet. We talk.
Yeah.
We talk about men. We talk about men's work. We talk about like what's going on in the world right now, and introduce people to you. So thank you for coming on the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me. Truly appreciate you.
Great, man. Okay, well, let's just get into this.
Sure.
What's going on? What's going on with men? What's going on with humanity right now? Mm. You and I were talking before the call, and there is a... I mean, I'm not a statistician, but there seems to be a plethora of shootings and stabbings happening, like on a mass level. You know, you and I talked last week. I came on your show, and I think people need to know that you have your own podcast. It's called the Trevor Boehm Podcast.
The Uncivilized Podcast. The Uncivilized Podcast.
Yes. The Uncivilized Podcast. And, you know, you asked me like, hey, what do Canadians think? You're in Colorado. What do you Canadians think of, all the shootings, the mass shootings that happened in the U.S.? And I said to you like, yeah, we like to look down at you guys and like literally look down on you and think like, oh, geez, we're glad we don't have it as bad as they do in the U.S. And then right around that time where we're just shaking our heads at you guys, something happens up here where we're like, oh, shit, we're not immune to that. And in between the call that you and I did last week and now, some guy walked into a library here in Vancouver and stabbed a bunch of people.
Right.
And the next day or 2 days later, some guy walked around and lit three buildings on fire. This is not normal here. Yeah. So something is up.
Yeah.
And like, what are you seeing? Like, what do you think is going on with men right now, particularly that, you know, may just be like an inflated version of what's always been kind of coming?
You know, unfortunately, here in the States, we saw this pre-COVID. It was like, it was a thing. It was just like, oh, it's been, you know, I'd get like a little bit nervous every 2 months. Like, oh, we haven't had a mass shooting here. Something's up. And so I think we had a diminishment of that as everybody had to stay inside. But the challenge is that the underlying issues that were creating the mass shootings or facilitating the mass shootings, let's say, not only didn't go away, but they got exponentiated. So I hate to say this, Ben, but I'm going to say it. I think we're going to see a lot more because suddenly you have people who have been isolated and have been challenged in that isolation and literally don't have an outlet for this overwhelming sense of emotion. Now the doors of society are back open and they have access to people that they can hurt or for whom they can hurt. And I think if we really want to dive into the root of this, we have to look at a couple different issues. First and foremost, we have to look at grief. I know it's an odd thing to bring, not like, oh, I'm grieving the fact that some shithead shot up a supermarket here in Colorado. That man must have been so filled with grief, in my opinion. And as long as men aren't allowed, in quotes, to feel sadness, then they're not going to dive deeper into what's even scarier or more rich or more condensed, which is grief. But if we are allowed to feel anger, like, well, that's pretty cool. Like, dudes, anger. Yeah. That's awesome. Let's do that. But even that gets suppressed because you're home or there's no one to mirror that anger. It just gets condensed, and it comes out as rage. And I imagine that if the guys in Vancouver had access to, you know, every American has between like 1 and 700 guns. So if you guys had access to the same potential weapons, it would have been a shooting in the library. It would have been a shooting instead of burning the buildings. So I think men's mental health is not something that we're really jazzed to talk about as a society, but yet we're seeing the aftermath of not dealing with men's mental health every day in the newspaper, every day in these mass events.
Yeah, you know what we really have a lot of access to lately is anger towards men. That type of anger is very appropriate. Anger towards, and you know, like it, you can look at the Me Too movement and how much disclosure was happening there, and you could be embarrassed to be a man, you could be angry at men overall. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been that kind of a sentiment. And then you look at specific people, specific men who are doing things like shooting up grocery stores or stabbings in libraries, and you can be really angry at those men. You know, that type of rage is like mm-hmm. super appropriate in our society mm-hmm. In this current time. We're really, it's like that's the only fair outlet for our anger now, is to attack something that we see as bad. And mm-hmm. I contrast that with the way that you just talked about men needing compassion. Essentially, mm-hmm. you were showing compassion towards a man who tried to kill 7 people and successfully mm-hmm. killed 1. Mm-hmm. And I think that piece seems to be missing from the dialogue in a lot of senses. There's not mm-hmm. a lot of compassion for those of us who are essentially the most wounded, mm-hmm. right? It's like we don't want to see it that way. We want to see them as bad or evil, and we want to condemn them and put them away and like snuff out the problem. Like we're really into attacking the problem.
For sure.
And in my experience, that doesn't work. You can't attack a drug addict to get sober. You can't attack right. a criminal to stop, you know, doing his crime. He's going to just fight mm-hmm. you to the death, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So there's this piece around the understanding of human nature that we seem to be missing on a large scale.
Yeah, we're really good at attacking the branch, but we're not really interested in talking about the root. Right. And the challenge with the culture that we live in, and it's a challenge for very good reason, is that most people have a hard time in their hands holding compassion for the perpetrators because they most likely have been perpetrated. And so this is where we get in this kind of chicken and egg of, okay, how do we ask someone who's been perpetrated to have compassion for the perpetrator? And until they do, or until we do as a society and say, hey, those people who are doing really awful shit, they are the most hurting. And so how do we stop them? We may not be able to reach them in this moment, but how do we reach the little flowering seeds of perpetrators who are going, wow, you have been traumatized, you have been abused, you have been victimized yourself over and over and over and over. Let's speak to you in a way that actually shows compassion. Then we can nip that seed in the bud. I watched this amazing video. So just a night or two ago, someone sent it to me, and it was a woman who went into prison here in the US, or into a prison, and had this huge circle of men out in the yard. I don't know if you've seen this. And she said, take a step forward if you've ever been physically assaulted as a child, right? And it was like, step forward. Take a step forward if you watch, I just got chills. If you watch like your father beat your mother more than 5 times, and it was like, step in. Mm-hmm. Take a step in if you grew up in what would now be considered extreme poverty. And essentially, they're just walking these guys into the middle of like, this is how you got here. And how many of you have ever considered the fact that you assaulted someone, killed someone, got into gangs, got into drugs, because you literally grew up in a fucking gladiator camp as a child? And that's still, I think there's some challenge socially and let's say culturally, Ben, for all of us to go, wow, that person needs love, compassion, care, therapy, help more than they need us to throw a book at them and say, okay, do better.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I like what we're talking about here. I mean, I'm wondering as you're talking, like, how did this happen? How are we so blind to, ourselves? Mm. And, you know, I feel like society in general, like, we don't understand ourselves. We don't understand how we got here. Like, we think we have a lot more free will than we actually do, right? Like, this is kind of what you're talking about. It's like, did the man choose to end up in prison, or did all of his life circumstances funnel him there?
He had no choice, right? Like, literally.
And we, like, some of us who grew up in him with more privilege, whether that was like wealthy parents, wealthy neighborhood, even middle class, like mm-hmm. everybody's like somewhere on the scale, you know?
Right.
But I feel like as a society, things are, we are getting, the quality of life is going up, right? Mm-hmm. Quality of life is generally going up across the world. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in a sense, all of humanity, like if you look at the average, it's like we're getting more privileged. Mm-hmm. And I, it makes me wonder if like that is making us even more blind to what it means to really have hardship. There's less and less of us who are experiencing true hardship in our lives. And when you're in that place, you kind of just like, you're kind of like, geez, I don't know what's wrong with those people. You know, like I, a lot of addicts that I have dealt with, I've dealt with a lot of addicts in recovery, and they always complain about people who don't understand addiction, telling them what they need to do because they just don't get it. Like, no, you don't get how powerless I am over this situation. You're like, well, I smoked cigarettes like 5 or 6 times when I was 18 and I just quit. I just quit cold turkey. You know, like what's wrong with you? You know?
Right.
And there's that sort of misunderstanding between the levels that I feel like could be happening now as we get more and more sheltered from true hardship.
Yeah, it seems like a double-edged sword because we're also for the first time you and I both probably have a very unique relationship with social media, but social media is this beautiful teacher. We have professional. I can watch Gabor Mate. I can watch Esther Perel. I can watch all of these professionals like sitting on my toilet in the morning, teaching me about trauma, about healing, about philosophy, and you know. Then I can get called all kinds of shitty names, and that's another a separate conversation.
Yeah.
So we have this. We have people finally making the connection that trauma, pain, suffering lead to the societal ills that we're plagued with. But we still have this big cognitive dissonance in this. We're still a very punitive culture, like you said. Part of us is like, you know what? I don't want to send that guy to rehab. Fuck him. Mm-hmm. I want to send him to prison.
Yeah.
Because you know why? Fuck him. Because I grew up with a dad who punished me, or I grew up with parents. I grew up in this system that said if you do bad, you should get punished. And I don't want to be compassionate for someone who I think is just making shitty choices. Mm-hmm. Right. So we still have blend this together.
Yeah. And I think it's easy to take that perspective when you're not in touch with all of the wounding, your trauma, and all of the dark parts of you, you know, the part of you that could murder someone if you totally like went off the handle, you know, for men, like the part of you
for sure.
that wants to take from a woman and without her consent, because there's a part of you that objectifies her and just wants what it wants. Mm-hmm. I think the more out of touch we get with these parts of us, the more it moves into the shadow, the more it controls us, and the more violently we attack what we see in other people.
For sure. You know?
And because we're not going to have compassion for it, right? But when I see now, because of my own addiction stuff and because of my work with addicts, like I can have compassion for addicts, even though, you know, sometimes their behavior is awful and gets them into a lot of trouble. I don't want to attack them. I don't want to throw them in jail. And I think actually we're starting to get that as a society. We're coming around. I think Gabor Mate has been a really huge help in that respect. He's like, listen, folks, these people are sick. They're not bad people.
Right.
You're dealing with anxiety. You take a pill for that. This person's dealing with major life trauma. They take drugs for that.
Right.
One thing is okay societally, the other is not. And that's the only difference. And people are going like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be doing like fucking sending the SWAT team in for a bag of cannabis.
Right. We have the people who are like, man, they just don't have any willpower. And you're like, go 3 days without coffee. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, fuck that shit. I can't go. I need my morning coffee. And you're like, now you get a little bit of a glimpse of it, right? I think you nailed it, that it's easy to look outward. And there's one of the beautiful things about loss is when you realize like, oh shit, I'm not special. And I actually could end up where that person is. I tell people all the time, like, if you're confused about mass shooting, you're confused about violence, you're confused about, like anything that you're seeing societally that's violent, look at your behavior on social media and look at your behavior in traffic. Oh, what do you know? You just called someone a cunt on Instagram and flipped someone off in a car and tried to, you know, and like that's, you have it in you too. So let's all just get off our high horses, take a deep breath and go, how do we address the root? And if the root, as Gabor says, and I firmly believe of so much of this is just pain. And again, for men, it's grief. It's like a deeper form of pain. Then why aren't we talking about that? Mm-hmm. You know, I used to work for a guy named Gavin De Becker who had this great question too, which was, how come we have all of these suicide hotlines, but we don't have any homicide hotlines? Right? Like if I call the police and say, like, you know what, I had a really bad day. I got a gun right here. I think I'm going to shoot myself. They're going to send someone over to come talk to me. But if I go, hey, I had a really bad day. I got a gun in my hand and I think I'm going to go shoot my neighbor. They're just going to tell me not to do it.
Yeah.
They're going to wish me luck. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's like, why do we have compassion for one end and not the other?
That's a really interesting concept. Yeah, yeah, I think it's the two sides of the warrior, the two shadow elements of the warrior, right? The sadist and the masochist. Mm-hmm. And the masochist is a little more okay, like, oh, you want to hurt yourself? Like, we're going to help you. Mm. But, oh, if you want to hurt other people, like, we're either going to do that or we're going to throw you in jail just for, like, your intent, you know, for thinking about it.
Right. We're going to get you around a whole bunch of other people who have traumatized as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see what you come up with.
I think this issue of men being lost is like, it's even more ethereal than the drug addiction thing, you know? Mm. It's the drug addiction or addiction in general is a little more definable than men who are just like lacking support, men who are wounded, men who don't know themselves and are not connected to other men in their lives. Right. The problem is so unseeable in a sense that, I think that's probably why we're talking about it, you know?
Yeah.
So how do we deal with this, Traver? Like you're a men's coach. You've been focusing on how to reach men, how to heal men. You wrote this book called Man Uncivilized. I'm not sure if that's going to be reversed, but it says Man Uncivilized, which is a fantastic book, by the way. It's very cool. Like, I like the way that you bound it. And
you
got like the Buddha on the back and the gorilla on the front.
Yeah, thank you. I think we do what you and I are doing is we get the word out. I think there's going to be two classes of men, Ben. And I'm not just saying this as a business owner. There are going to be men who have the support of other conscious initiated men. And there will be the others. And those other men will struggle in ways that guys like you and I or guys in our groups don't. Because we're literally, we have the mix of I have this great image downstairs that our friend Connor Beaton gave everybody in our men's group. And it's half of the, like, if you take fuck you and you cut that in half, and if you take love you and you cut it in half and you squeeze it together. And like, that's one image. And he goes, this is what it's like to be in a men's group. And and how many of us respond positively to that of like, you know what? I'm so fucking pissed you guys just called me forward on this because now I have to deal with it. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for calling me forward on this because now I get to deal with this.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we actually shift the culture is one, you said it, we need to redefine the role of men in a way that men want to be redefined. So if we just say, hey, being a man is just an ethereal concept and it doesn't really mean anything and it's not important and you can do whatever you want. Yeah. It's literally just like, do you have a male body? Then you're good to go. Then that is really confusing for a lot of men. A lot of men don't know what their role is right now. Like they don't know why they're here, what they're supposed to be doing, what we're supposed to be doing as a collective, what they're supposed to be doing individually.
Yeah.
We've seen too many of our fathers work 80-hour weeks, get the big house, get the cars, get the money, and then boom, they lose it all. And we've seen the counterculture, which is like, you can just play video games and get high now and order pussies free on Tinder. You know, you can get a pizza sent to your house with a swipe. Like, you don't literally have to do anything. You're just waiting to die.
Yeah.
And so somewhere in between the two is this archetype that needs to come forward of a man who is conscious, a man who is initiated, a man who does have a mission and a purpose, whatever that mission and purpose may be. a man who wants to express himself throughout the entire spectrum of masculinity, whether he wants to be a ballet dancer or a Navy SEAL, it doesn't matter. It's just, is he grounded in who he is? Does he have access, in my wording, to the primal? Like, is he okay out? Does he have access to nature? Is he out there barefoot a couple times a year? Right? Has he spent the night in the woods? Because that's really important to our species. And then two, is he connected to something higher than himself? I don't care about religion or spiritual. Does he believe that there's some energy in the world that's bigger than he is? You take those two things and you give him a container within which to also work through some of his trauma. You give him a container within which to tussle with some other men and test himself a little bit. And then you put him out in the world and say, hey, here's why you're here. You know, the last 30 years where we were told we don't need men. Nobody needs men. Like, we can reproduce with a test tube. We don't need your money. We don't need anything about you. That was a lie. We're now realizing that was a lie. Yeah. And that lie had an after effect, which is depression, anxiety, homicide, sexual. It has all of these negative outcomes that weren't really expected. So I think it's first and foremost just exactly what you and I are both doing, which is spreading a conversation. It's like, hey, did you know there's more to being a man? That's all I'm going to give you today. That's it.
More than just this, right? Because what you were describing, I pictured a man sitting in front of a screen and his only dimension that he was expanding was coming out of his eyes and into his screen, right? Just like just this one pole, feedback loop between the straight line where he's shooting out at the screen. He's got no one at his side. He's got no one at his back. And there's nothing up or down that he's connected to, right? He's not aware of those dimensions.
Right.
And what I heard you describing was like men who are stuck in just that, when that becomes the meaning of your life, you become self-destructive, other-destructive. Like the abort button starts getting pushed. Like, this isn't what it means to be a human, to be like tethered to this thing and to have nobody, right? And so you're talking about the roots, like the energy center pointing down at the ground, you know, connection to nature, you know, and the roots pointing up, that's the Buddha, you know, connecting to whatever your higher order is, your higher self, the better version of yourself or whatever. And then having like a circle around you of men, this circle of support, you know, and I think that was a really beautiful vision. And it really brings up for me this, like, this sentence, I've got your back. It's on my back right now.
I love it.
It's written on my back. And what is that? How do you interpret that? Those words?
You know, I was an athlete my whole life. So to me, it's like, you've got a teammate. I'm looking out for you. It's both. It's the yes and of, if you fall backwards, there's going to be some hands to catch you. And if you're leaning too far forward and getting a little bit ahead of yourself, there's going to be a hand that's going to grab you and pull you back into center. And this isn't about control. It's about support and it's about guidance. And that, I'm 45 years old. I still have mentors who are in their 60s and in their 70s. So I'm like, you guys have lived this before. Like, what the hell do I do? And I think the disconnection of men, the lone wolf of men, the removal of elders from our lives, the removal of brothers from our lives, the removal of teammates has been detrimental. Because left to our own devices, we're simply just going to ping off of our own wounds.
Yeah.
And so I think I love the back of your shirt. It's one of still my favorite sayings and favorite things to hear from women, from my partner, from other guys, from my business team, like everybody. Like, hey, you're not alone. Remember that.
Yeah.
You belong to something, Ben. I think that's another big point that's in the West. The deepest wound is that we don't belong to anything. We don't have tradition. We don't have ceremony. We don't have ritual. We don't have culture. We're constantly trying to appropriate whatever feels good to us in the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm just going to steal a little bit of this. We are the spiritual orphans. Mm-hmm. And that feeling is this deep-rooted pain of like, I don't have any connection to anything.
Yeah.
And we've gotten away from that.
So we're looking for connection, and there's, you know, an interesting thing I think that's happened over the last, say 15, but really 10 years with online connection between groups is you get the disenfranchised, angry groups that seek support with one another because they feel that identity, like this incel community, mm-hmm. involuntarily celibate men who are just rageful about their status and going in and just basically cycling their anger and their rage around so that it boils higher and higher and higher. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, you have some guys emerge from that community that are, you know, bombing or shooting.
And yeah, we had a shooting in Santa Barbara with a guy who was celebrated afterwards by that community. Celebrated of like, look at one of us did. And you're right. It's like tribalism. It's in-group, out-group. It's us against them. And you nailed it. Just this cyclone of energy going upward until it has to burst. Like they're ticking time bombs. Now imagine if one of those guys joined your group, joined the Samurai Brotherhood, and was taken in and said, hey man, we get that you are angry. We get that you are in pain. We get that you're frustrated. We get that you feel like everybody's at a party that you're not invited to. And that must really, really, really suck. And here's what we're going to ask you to do about it. And here's a guide that's going to hold, you're going to check in with once a day. Here's some action steps that we're going to change the situation. We're going to change you. Like, think that is how but you guys are all initiated. You guys have all probably had the fuck you, love you sentence come out of your house or out of your mouth at least once or twice after a meeting. You've gotten alchemized. You've gotten changed. So that's what my hope is that this work that we're doing isn't this weird niche thing. And people today, to this day, are like, do you guys go out in the woods and like drum naked? And I'm like, no, you know, we think about it, but no, it's really not what we're after.
It doesn't have to be that complicated. You know, like what you described is really simple. And, you know, there is magic that happens when a guy feels truly seen by a group, mm-hmm. when a guy feels understood. You know, nothing has to change physically in his life. He just needs to be seen and understood. And that mm-hmm. releases so much pressure, releases so much rage and anger. And the funny part is that being seen and understood isn't just like, hey man, like you're a really great guy. Like we really think you're cool. Like nice hair. Like I like how you walk, or like, I don't know, whatever. It's just compliments. That's not seeing someone, right? Our society kind of operates on that level of politeness, right? Like that's what it means to be seen. Like just like give someone lots of love.
Yeah.
But I'll tell people how being seen looks in a men's group. It's most recently in my group, it's sitting a guy in front of the fire, you know, because we've been having some meetings outside, pushing him real close to the fire so it's nice and hot, maybe a little bit too hot. And then we spend some time saying to him like, hey, here's why I don't trust you, because you don't take care of your space, or because you're not always on time and you make excuses for yourself. Sometimes you're not true to your word. I don't trust you because when I challenge you, your eyes dart around like this, like you're avoiding something, and like you're not actually listening to me, and you're not in your body. I don't trust you because I don't feel like you're in your body. I feel like you're in your head all the time. I don't trust you because you're not super on purpose. You don't really have like, you just want money in your life. Like there's no depth there. And like he sits there and he does his best to listen, and he breathes and he opens his eyes and he's getting hot, you know? And then we spend some time saying to him, hey man, here's why I do trust you, because you show up, because you stick around. Because when I hug you, I feel you, you know? When I look into your eyes and we're having a moment together, I feel your heart. You know, I feel like you'll show up for me when I really need you. And like, we say stuff like that. And at the end, the guy goes, that was hard and awesome and intense. And I feel like you guys see me. I feel seen, man. Mm-hmm. And that shit's magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's both. It's like you're giving a man like depth of how you release, because that's how humans are. We are all of those things.
Right.
We are the paradox. And so when someone actually sees the paradox of who you are, instead of wanting to fight it, you're like, wow, geez, that was fucking refreshing. Hey, like, can we see people as a fucking paradox these days? Or does a person have to be one thing only forever? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and like, just that, just what you described, man, think of what that does to the root of that man. You weren't like, hey, we need you to stop smoking cigarettes. We need you to stop eating Doritos. We need you to stop jerking off to internet porn. We just, hey, we see you. This is why we trust you. This is why we don't. And I have a sense that that conversation will lead to less cigarette smoking, less Dorito eating, and less porn watching than if you had gone after the branches. Yep. And that guy was like, okay, now I'm just going to white knuckle those three things, and I'm going to come back 2 months from now with three new branches that I'm a little bit scared to tell you guys about, but we haven't gotten to the root.
Yep.
So it feels like we're just juggling these branches societally, and men especially, we're just juggling the, how do I make money? How do I get laid more? And how do I get abs?
Yeah.
These are my three. When I've accomplished these three, my mission as a man is done here.
Yeah.
And yet we're not getting to the depth and the root. And I'm curious how many people listening to this, guys especially, just shit themselves a little bit thinking about being in front of the fire with you boys. Right?
It's terrifying. Yeah. It's terrifying the first time. And then afterwards, the guy's like, whew.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I feel a little more like a fucking king right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. All right? Because you kind of got roasted. But there's something in men that we like that.
Yeah.
And when we don't have that from the world, we start poking the world. Like, I have a friend who, one of my best buds was basically quite anarchistic as a kid. He was just, like, he literally bombed his own house. He got the fucking anarchist cookbook. He made a bomb and he blew a fucking hole in the side of his house. Because he wanted so badly to be disciplined by his father. And his father was he wasn't that way.
He was soft. Yeah.
And in fact, in that experience, his father called the neighbor from down the street to come and speak to my friend and try to discipline him because he literally didn't know how to deal with him.
Right.
And that's what we do. That's what the masculine does when it wants to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And so... the structures that we've devised in this society are cages for that. You know, like, oh, you want to challenge the system? We're going to lock you up.
Right.
They're going to take you down. We're going to lock you up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a lesser privileged person, we may kill you on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We may, you know, if you resist rest, we may choke you to death.
Right. 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 Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's, we need something different. We need more than what we've got right now.
Yeah. And I would love to add that I've been in front of that fire, and I'd imagine you have, and there is no day where you're like, this is really lovely, all of it. there's no time, and I still get nervous in the men's groups, and they're like, okay, let's talk about you, or let's please have a seat in the middle. It's like, oh boy, all the training, all the book writing, all the TED talking, all the podcasting is like, okay, here I am naked in front of it, like metaphorically. In front of a group of men, I'm going to get my shit called.
Yeah. Meet your fear, right?
Oof.
Welcome to your fear. But there's something, so beautiful about meeting your fear. And you were before this call, you were describing to me a situation that you saw on social media where somebody was being attacked and everybody's just scared. Everybody's standing around scared. It's like we're all we don't know how to confront our fear because it's like we're paralyzed, we're trapped right now. There's like all of these expectations about how we're all supposed to be, and like we're all afraid to be racist or patriarchal or misogynist, and we're stuck, right? And so I wanted to know what you think about that.
You know, the incident that we're talking about is a woman, an Asian woman in New York City being attacked by a black man in front of an office building. So the office camera, the security camera catches it. And it also catches security guards who literally don't look like they give a fuck as it's happening. And people walking by and people just like he's stomping on her and literally no one's doing anything. And at first watching it, there's this overwhelming sense of anger and rage of like, why are like, I want to grab everybody and kind of shake them. But the what's underneath that is I want to shake them out of the paralysis and say, where's the humanity? Like, yeah. I don't care what color, what creed, how old, but where's the humanity of just watching another human beat another, a lesser strength human get assaulted by a stronger human? Where's everybody else? What happened here?
Yeah, and, I mean, and if that was a white cop, everybody would have been all over it. Right?
It's we're so afraid of the scarlet letter, whatever the current scarlet letter is, right? It seems to shift through the media of, it used to be toxic masculinity, now it's white supremacy, then it's going to be, who knows what it's going to be, but it's this like overarching branch that paralyzes the community and doesn't let us actually have conversations about the real issues, which is we have a very large man kicking the shit out of a very small woman. Period, fucking period. That's all that I see. Why isn't someone stepping in? But you said it. Think of how many thoughts perhaps were going through those security guards' heads of, am I going to get sued? Am I going to get killed? Am I going to end up on social media? Am I going to lose my job? What's the insurance company going to think about this who runs the building? What's the building manager going to think? Well, she's this. What maybe it's just, and then in that point, the 30 seconds are over and this incident's happened, as opposed to dropping below all of that and just saying, this isn't okay with me. I don't care what the ramifications are. This isn't okay with me as a human. I need to do something, even if it's literally lie across that woman and shield her with my body. Yeah. I don't need to engage with this other guy. But yeah, it's frustrating, Ben, because it's frustrating and yet I understand it. Right? I've talked to a number of men who watched that video who literally said, you can blame that on feminism. And I was like, okay, you guys got to walk me through this. And it was like, well, are we equals or are we equals? And I was like, all right, come on. I don't think that was the point that they were getting across. There was a lot of other things that feminism really needed to address, such as like 20 years ago, my sister's boss could like tell her, well, if you want to move up in the company, you just have to sleep with me. And that was A-okay, right? Like we had to get rid of a bunch of shit right, in order to actually reach a legal state of equality. So I view it as, again, men not understanding their role or having being conditioned out of their role of, what if we were in a protective class? What if we were saying, I don't care who's X, Y, and Z is involved in this. This isn't okay. If I see someone assaulting a kid, it's not okay. I remember in high school, literally, I ditched high school one day in Connecticut and went into New York City with a bunch of my friends. And essentially just drank 40s and thought we were really cool, but saw some dude like kicking his dog. And we were 14, 15 year old kids. And all three of us jumped in. We're like, do not touch this fucking dog again, or we will kick the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Because it was like guttural. It was like, I'm not okay with you doing this to this animal.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe at that age we didn't have as much to consider, but I would love for, it was like my humanity couldn't deal with that.
Yeah. That's right? I totally get it. And the more we move away from things like that, I'm a little bit more of a take action yourself kind of guy. I'm a little more vigilante, and that has got me into some trouble in my life. But I still lean towards wanting that for the rest of humanity. I want people to stand up and support each other and protect each other more and not stand by, you know, out of fear.
Right.
You know? And for men, it's like, can we make that jump from like, oh, now we're marginalized because women are equal to, right?
Oh, poor to, us.
To like, to, okay, we're equal in terms of like many, many, many things. We have equal value in the world.
Right.
And women are more vulnerable overall. And men can take the role of being more protective overall. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we're better and they're worse. It means that we're taking that role to mm-hmm. offset the vulnerability, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
we're doing our part.
Right.
And it's like, we feel like if we do that, like we're doing women a favor, or like we are better than them and we want something back. Mm-hmm. But like, we get all kinds of things back. It's like, we're out of touch with the value that women bring in the world. Mm.
We've lost our reverence completely, if we had it, but we've lost respect and reverence for the feminine and for everything that is feminine, even within ourselves. It's slowly, hopefully coming back into, I hate to use the word popularity, but into just the male collective of, hey, maybe we are all in this together and we have different strengths and we have different talents and we have different uses, for lack of a better word. And when we actually do combine, we make magic. Mm-hmm. And so we have a role. We have a responsibility, Ben. I think that keeps coming back to me as I'm born in a very different body than half the planet. That comes with responsibility to, one, not be abusive with it, but then also to use it, like you said, when I can. I'm not driving around my city looking for people abusing each other, but if I see it, I'm going to say something or I'm going to do something. That's my responsibility, or at least how I feel my responsibility is as a man.
And you don't have to do it alone. Like, half the world is made up of men. You know, like, how many people were on that fucking street, right? Like,
right.
I get it. If there was no one around and there was just a security camera, then it would be a different conversation that we've been having. But it sounds like they were surrounded by people.
They were in New York City. This isn't like a back alley in Omaha, Nebraska, where they're like a farmland. It was New York City. The security guards, guys who were paid to protect, were on camera just looking around, like they pretending that they didn't even say it, didn't see it. And I would have been okay if they went out and started yelling.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. You don't want to physically get involved and get yourself killed. That's on you. That's okay. But go scream, go yell, go something. So somebody help this lady, or stop, right? Like, just become involved, be willing to at least make contact with the situation as opposed to pretending that the situation doesn't exist.
Yeah. I like what you said about, you're speaking about the branch and the root. Mm-hmm. And, I watched some media of you recently talking about, people getting out of sorts about a hashtag or this not all men hashtag and you know, men defending themselves, you know, like, well, I'm not a rapist and he's not a rapist mm-hmm. over here. So like, let's not frame all men as rapists. And essentially the core of your message was like, yo, you're missing the point. Like, we don't need to point out the non-rapists in the world right now, you know, like that's not you doing your work. You're not doing anybody any favors, mm-hmm. you know? If people were walking around with signs and this was like a public message, like all men are rapists, then we have a problem. But that's not what's happening.
Right.
It's not what's happening. We have a lot of rapists being exposed right now. And mm-hmm. we have a lot of women sharing their experience and their pain and their hurt, their trauma.
Mm.
And, you know, if men doing their work looks like, hey, well, not all guys are rapists, then we got to do better, man. Like, you're focusing on this like little leaf over here on the branch. Mm-hmm. And you know, what you spoke about in that video was like, yo, we need to focus on the roots.
Right.
And the roots is like, if, you know, in my words, is like, what's your work to do? Mm-hmm. Fuck the hashtag. What is your work that you need to be doing here? What part of you is a rapist, you know, because there's what leads to rape is the idea that women are objects to be taken from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think we objectify everybody, all of us. We do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, this person's a means to an end. This person's a means to an end. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use you for money. I'm going to use you for approval. I'm going to use you for social status. So you're cooler than me. So if I'm beside you, everybody will think I'm cool. Yeah, and this pretty woman over here, I'm going to use you for my sexual pleasure. Either first in my mind, and then I'm going to whistle at you, which is a subtle assault. Mm-hmm. And you can't do anything about the whistle because I'm over here and you're over there. And then maybe I'm going to cop a feel, you know?
Right.
All men have been involved in some of this.
Right.
And the work is not like defending yourself or defending men, really, it's, in my opinion. It's looking at that stuff, owning that stuff, telling a safe group of people about that part of your mind, exposing it.
Sure.
And there's something that happens when you do that. It kind of like, it comes home, you get more control over it by owning it rather than rejecting it, right?
Yeah, 100%. What I saw in that conversation too, that I think a lot of men were missing, was like the crying out of like, please help us, from women, of saying, you guys are doing this. We're not raping each other, or very, very rarely. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like this is, we're talking about the actual iceberg, which is you guys doing this. Why aren't you involved in this fight? Why isn't it important to you? Yeah. What do we have to do to get the message across to you that we need your help? And for us to go like, why isn't it important to us? Mm-hmm. Right? Just because I'm not doing it. Like I still want to go after inequality in the world. I want to go after what you said. And if I can inspire a group of men to say, hey, let's just look at our darkness. Let's own how we may even be contributing to this in the furthest possible way. Right? Did someone make a rape joke and you kind of chuckled? Or you just brushed it off. That right there is your lost opportunity. That's how you can help. Mm-hmm. Right? Even if that's all you do, you've at least contributed. But by throwing your hands in the air and saying, like, this has nothing to do with me, you're not contributing, and you're also missing a really big opportunity. And you and I speak to, when I talk to men, men listen. When men talk to me, I listen. We have this weird thing that, like, a woman can give us an idea, and I'm sure your partner is probably going to like nod furiously when she hears this, because I know mine has immensely. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of a dumb idea. And then a week later, I'll come back and be like, my buddy just had this brilliant, genius idea, and said the exact same words. And somehow our male brain is like, male voice, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So what if we actually were able to shift this on behalf of our sisters, our mothers, our daughters, our girlfriends, our friends, our female friends, and if nothing else, for the collective of the planet to just say, this isn't okay with me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get involved in this, because what Me Too taught us was that every single woman has had to deal with something multiple, multiple, multiple times. And it's shit that you and I don't ever have to deal with. And if we did, it would blow our minds.
Yeah.
Right? Like if I had a male boss who was like knocking on my hotel room door at 2 o'clock in the morning, drunk, being like, hey, you know, if you let me fuck you, I'll give you a promotion. That would blow my mind. I wouldn't know what to do. But this is, you ask any woman, has this happened? And 90% of the hands are going to go up.
Yeah. And so in general, we don't have to deal with it. Because it's not being perpetrated upon us, but it's like we also don't have to deal with it because women tend not to bring that stuff to us in general, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not safe. You know, I can't tell you how many Me Too stories I've heard in the last few years, and before that, working at rehab, like working at co-ed rehabs, like every single woman in there has severe sexual trauma. Mm-hmm. The stuff happens, and then you ask them like, well, what happened after? And they're like, oh, I tried telling this person and they like didn't do anything, or they didn't believe me, or I told the cops and they asked me what I was wearing, right? You know, like that kind of stuff. And so my conclusion was that like, it's not safe to talk to men about this. Mm-hmm. And it may not even be safe to talk to women about it either, because they might not believe me either. Mm-hmm. You know, I went and told my mom and she didn't believe me. Right. So for me as a man, there's like two places that I can sort of do the work. It's like with men, I can do the work in terms of like owning those darker parts of me and holding and being a part of a container that holds me accountable to behave in a certain way in the world. Right. Mm. Beautiful. And then on the women's side, if I boil it down, it's like, how do I practice being a trustworthy person?
Right.
A person who, if something really scary and vulnerable happens to a woman, she feels safe coming to me and telling me.
Right.
She doesn't second guess herself, thinking like, oh, well, if I tell him, he's probably going to like make excuses and be like, well, like, are you sure that he raped
Dismiss
you?
Her,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, were you kind of asking for it? Right. Right.
Fuck. Yeah. I know. Like, I know.
You want to like make yourself not a safe person. Like do that kind of shit.
Right.
Just challenge someone. It's like that's how men communicate in a way. It's like we communicate via challenge a lot of the time, and then we try to do that with women, and they're like, wow, I'm not safe.
Right.
And you're like, what? But that's the work. It's like, how do I make myself a more trustworthy person, you know? And I like what you said in that talk at the end. You said, I wrote it down, let others be safer as I walk among them.
Right.
If that's your mission in life,
right,
you're doing the work.
You're doing great, because there's so much behind that. It's not just like, cool, I have a gun, I know a rear naked choke, and I can deadlift 315. Like, I'm a pretty safe dude. Yeah. It's like, oh, I've done the work on my darkness. I've done the shadow work. I've hung out with a group of guys. I've realized all the ways that I am dismissive of people, because I view what they're bringing to me as a direct challenge to me, rather than them just sharing their experience. It's like it's a simple sentence, but yet what's behind it is massive. And it's what's behind it that I'm after. Like, what if we actually did have a million men adopt that mantra? Like, think of how that would just shift in North America. Of like, hey, you know what, guys? That's not okay. Hey, you know what? We just watched you buy that fourth shot for her. She can't even stand up. Mm-hmm. Like, we're calling her a cab and putting a woman next to her so that we know she's safe getting home tonight.
Yeah.
All of these things that we actually do see and kind of go like, well, we'll just let that slide. Or like, it's part of me, but I don't really want to admit that, you know, like, I have a little predatory side, and it comes out after my third beer, and I'm usually around women, and like, nobody's getting hurt, right? Like, that kind of shit is what we have to actually nip in the butt, rather than, okay, I'm not a serial rapist, so fuck it, my work's done here. Yeah. Like, I checked the not serial rapist box on my taxes, and so I'm good to go here. Like, I have nothing to contribute.
Yeah. It's tough, man, because, like, yeah, we're really sort of ingrained in that. You know, I had a meeting a little while ago with a men's group, and one of the guys in the group witnessed one of his relatives cheating on his wife. Like, he was there. He's like, we went out for the night, and then he picked up another gal, and he's married.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was in another country, and he was like, I don't know if this is normal here. Like, I'm not sure what to do. Like, I don't see this guy that often. And you know, is it my business? You know, but we sort of sorted through it. It took us a while to like get off the like, well, it's none of your business. Like, let him be who he is, and don't worry about it. You know,
right?
And we got onto the like, well, what's your code that you live by? You know,
right?
Honesty. Right. Like, are you 100% honest? 100%. You're shooting for 100% integrity in your life. Well, now you're holding this secret while you see this guy's wife and, you know, like, nod and smile, right? Like, yeah, everything's great, you know? So, like, now he has to confront this guy and tell him, like, wow. Hey, man, we gotta do something about this, because this is my business now. Like, you've just made this my business.
Right.
And the guy's lying. He's lying to his wife. So it's like,
right,
are you living by a code, or are you just like, is your code me, whatever I want in the world?
Yeah,
I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get it.
You know? And the path of least resistance, and the path of least conflict. Yeah, this is why I can talk, you know, for 7 hours, Ben, about why I love intentional men's groups, is because we get to bring stuff that's nuanced like that, and go, okay, let's work through the cliches.
Yeah.
Like, the cliches say, like, not your business, or like, whatever happens, like, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah.
But then let's drop under the cliche, and let's look at it from this angle, and then let's look at it from this angle, and then let's look at it from this angle. And in a supportive container, that man actually gets to come back to, this is what's true for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't okay. And I didn't say anything because, you know what? He paid for my college. And so who am I to challenge my uncle who paid for my college? You know, like, I'm just going to take this one. And you're like, okay, cool. So you're out of integrity when it comes to money. Are you willing to say that? Like, well, I'm not. This is why I love it. Because then you actually leave that man with truth. And then you also kind of put him back together and say, hey, you know what? We love you. I get that was a really hard experience. That's why this group exists. Because making decisions like that on the fly may not always happen. You may be acting from a wounded place. You may be acting from the little boy place. You may be acting from the prostitute archetype in that position.
Yeah.
And now you know. And everybody in the circle also goes, holy shit, I just learned a ton.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not just about that one guy.
Have you ever seen this movie, Kingdom of Heaven? Orlando Bloom. And it's about the fight between the Muslims and the Christians for Jerusalem, like in, I don't know, 600 AD.
If I did, I saw it years and years ago.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite movies because it illuminates this, how far are you willing to go to live by your code?
Mm.
You know, to die with your word, you know? And I encourage people to go and watch this because it sort of illustrates what Trevor and I are talking about. This young man who thinks he's a blacksmith all of a sudden gets approached by a man who's who is like the king's servant. Like he's a, what are these guys called? Whatever. He's a nobleman. And he's like, hey, you're actually my son. And if you want to come with me, there's like a whole kingdom for you. And he goes with him, and then his dad's dying, and he gives him a code to live by, to protect other people, to never lie, to never harm another person, without unless they're like attacking you, and then he slaps him in the face to say, and this is to make sure you remember all of this, mm-hmm. and then he dies.
Wow,
this is all at the beginning of the movie, so I'm not spoiling much for anybody. But the rest of the movie is like a series of trials where this guy is approached by this sex, you know, the temptress and the like power. And, you know, he ends up being an advisor to the king, and the king's like, hey, if you want the throne, like you could cut this corner here and I'll give it to you. And then there's also like, hey, there's an attack on Jerusalem and we might lose the city. But if you cut this corner here, you'll save everybody in the kingdom. Ooh. And he has to face this conundrum of like, do I stay true to my word and to my code and have faith that that's my path in this world? Or do I cut corners and betray the word of my father that I gave to him? And it's like, it shows the paradox of like, there's no easy choices in life, but there's something respectable about this man at the end of the movie where you're like, wow, shit went real bad there, but but this guy he's true. He's true to his word, and you know, he could be on his deathbed and be like, I did all that I could to stay true to myself and to my integrity. And he had a circle of trusted advisors as well that held him accountable, right? And yeah, so it's just a beautiful illustration of that, like the ideal of having a code to live by and a circle of people who support you in that, and how that can create amazing, powerful, a meaningful life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, if I could ask you a question, I think it would be, what are three things that a man today can do to reconnect to his nature, or to heal, you know, the wounds that we're talking about men are suffering from right now. Like, how can we get out of our mess? And like, for one man listening to this, how can he not become one of the casualties that we're seeing?
I think one of the bigger lies that we've fed to men over the past decade is that there's an absence of choice. And so when men realize, I ask them this question all the time. I can sum up my entire movement into two questions, which is, one, are you leading or being led? Both are fine as long as they're done consciously. And when you are leading in every area of your life, something magical happens. When you actually get to take a moment, take a breath, and write down, like, these are the areas that I'm not thriving in. These are the areas that I'm struggling in. I'm going to take an action in one of those areas. I'm going to lead in one of those areas. And I want to preface this by saying it's leading to actively be led. Like, for 4 years, I couldn't tell you my business numbers, but I can tell you that I had a post-it note that I wrote every month, which was, do your damn numbers. And so I finally hired a bookkeeper That was how I was like, all right, I need to admit that this is like, I'm on a 4-year rhythm here. I ain't doing my numbers. So that was how I led. And now my bookkeeper calls me and goes, here's how much money you have. Here's how much money you can spend here, blah, blah, blah. So take a look, like, have an honest accounting of your life, guys. And then ask yourself, are you showing up? Or are you abdicating responsibility to someone else? Are you hoping that that dream job, that your health, that the relationship, that this thing you want to do is going to come knock on your door? That's step one. Mm-hmm. And then step two is, the question two is, what are your wounds and what are you doing to heal them? Like, you, this is the another lie that we've told men, is that unless you are capital T traumatized, you have no right to complain.
Yeah.
So you weren't raped, your mom wasn't shot, you weren't part of, you know, your airplane didn't crash, like you didn't have one of these huge things happen to you. How dare you bitch? How dare you even bring it up? Because remember, you're the perpetrator, you're in the perpetrator's class. So for all men to go, okay, if I am 7 years old, I have been traumatized. If you're over seven, you've definitely, like, we're all been traumatized. How those wounds are informing us and informing our lives, that's what you need to investigate. And guys, hear this, it's hard work. It's tough work, it's confronting work, right? Well, you and I have probably worked with guys who have been in very, very intense physical situations, from police, firemen, military. And I can ask all those guys, what's the hardest shit you've ever done? And they're like, this, personal work, shadow work, actually realizing that, holy crap, you know, my parents' divorce actually fucked me up.
Uh-huh.
And here I am, 35 years old. I'm on my third divorce. I'm on my sixth DUI. And I'm finally ready to realize that that thing that happened when I was eight, when my parents split and told me everything was fine and it was cool because I just tell everybody I got 2 Christmases, so it was no big deal.
Yeah.
That's a thing. So I think if we just give that those two concepts to men rather than perhaps a third piece. Well, yeah, here's the third piece. Get outside. Like, right. go put your feet in some grass. Yeah. Go get in the ocean, right? Go climb a tree. Go do something that involves nature, because we are natural beings and we have this extraordinary relationship with nature that has been severed. I think if we take that in a nutshell, you know, like that's years of work for a man.
Yeah.
And if we can also get across the idea that you and I have talked a lot about the work. We've talked about being in the fire. We've talked about the challenge of it. But what we haven't talked about is how fucking amazing your life is on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. And how that amazement isn't just like, oh my God, I get to feel great in my men's groups. It's, I get to feel great every day. I get to feel on purpose every day. My relationships are so much smoother. They're so much more generative. I enjoy them. My brotherhood makes me feel like, God, someone's having someone have my back. It feels good. And it feels better than the 6-pack I'm drinking to trying to cover up for the fact that I don't feel like I have my back. I think that's where we really need to hit men and sell the benefit. Like, you guys, this is great shit. Yeah, it's hard. The price of entry to feeling great is fucking hard. And it's like nothing anyone ever sold you. It's what everybody's trying to sell you is the feeling you're going to get on the other side of this work.
Yeah. Amazing, man. Lead, heal, and connect to nature. Like those three, focusing on those three things, it's a lifelong journey, but geez, that's it, man.
Right. It doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one other thing that I feel like I wanted to say that we didn't get to in this conversation was that there's been a lot of, you know, you and I have been watching a lot of clips lately of you know, men doing destructive things, and that's kind of been the root of this conversation. And I watched one yesterday where this guy was lighting buildings on fire in Vancouver, and these guys pulled over in a minivan and were filming him and on the phone with the police at the same time. And the guy walked back to his car, to his minivan, and was throwing the gas can in there, and a undercover cop came over and pulled his gun out and was pointing the gun at the guy and was like, yo, stand down. And the guy's like, no. And cops are very polite here in Canada relative to other places. So I guarantee the cop wasn't even thinking about shooting the gun. you know? Yeah. And the guy like actually threw some punches at the cop to try to get him to go away and then started walking towards his driver's door and opened the door. And then the cop tried stopping him and he batted the cop away. And then he got in the van. And then the cop stood in front of the car, sort of off to the side. And I was like, geez, is the cop going to like shoot the tires out or something? Yeah. He's going to shoot the guy. And in the end, the guy just sped off. And the cop was standing there like, fuck.
Wow.
You know, and my heart was racing watching this clip. And I was thinking to myself, dude, cops get a real, they've got a real bad rap right now. Mm-hmm. They got a real bad rap. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly repair to be done. There's certainly reform that needs to be done. But man, I don't envy that job. That guy's doing a hard job, man. He could have been run over. The guy could have pulled a gun on him and shot him. Yeah. There could have been, he could have got hit by a car because there's cars driving by. Like there's any number of things that could have happened. And he was just, it's interesting without his uniform on, he's just a dude. He's just like, he looked like just like a good Samaritan who happened to have a gun. And, he's, you know, looked like he's doing his best to be polite and do all the right things.
Yeah.
They caught the guy anyways. But, man, I just want to speak to that like, you know, if any cops are listening to this, I know cops, it's a hard time to be a police officer, to be the guy sort of rushing into the line of fire and rushing into really sort of dangerous, scary places where you never know what the hell's going to happen. And to be sort of serving, you're supposed to be serving society. And a lot of 99% of the time, that's what's happening, you know, in one way or another, trying to protect and serve. And I just need to shout out to the people out there who are serving. Yeah.
It's a whole nother conversation, Ben, of what we expect from the police and what we give the police and then what we don't give the police. I have my number two guy in the Uncivilized Nation was a Marine and was a cop. And I asked him which was more traumatic, Afghanistan or being a cop. And he was like, by far it was policing. Like, because I may literally walk into a triple homicide and two of the people dead are kids, and then 2 hours later be sitting down at my own table eating dinner with my children trying to get through the day. I may take a shower, go to bed, get up the next morning, and guess what? I'm right back into work. Yeah. Whereas, like, at least in the military, it would be you may be out for a week and then you're rotated back for 2 weeks. There's downtime. But these guys get traumatized and traumatized and traumatized, and they're literally like, hey, go home, have a shower, come back. They're like, yeah. And I'm supposed to get over that. Like, it's ludicrous what we ask of them, and then the lack of support that we provide them. And I will say there needs to be reform. But we as a society, we have to look at the police very differently. And we have to say, I think you nailed it. We have to remember that there's an actual human behind that badge. There's a human just like you and I had, you know, may have had family problems growing up, may have had a parents that got divorced, may have had the capital T trauma, may have had the little T trauma, maybe going through a divorce himself or herself, maybe having their own struggles. And yet here we're like, hey, if you're not perfect in this extraordinarily nuanced situation that you have 1.8 seconds to figure out, we're going to annihilate you.
Yeah.
We are just going to skewer you all over the television. Yep. And there needs to be reform.
There needs to be reform. And there, the worst thing that we could do is bring this way of attacking the problem to attacking the police, right? Like, The police already get attacked a lot. You know, I went for a hike a few months ago with a new friend named Faisal. Shout out to Faisal. And he was a cop in San Jose for 10 years. And he told me some stories on that hike, man. He was like, yeah, here's a story about a time that I walked into a bar because a guy was causing trouble. And he pulled out a giant knife and was trying to kill me with the knife and the tussle that ensued. And another time in a restaurant where another guy tried to kill me. Mm-hmm. And story after story. And so going back to how we deal with this stuff on the societal level, attacking the police isn't going to help them. Like, maybe there's different things that need to be funded, et cetera. I don't know if I'm not 100% pro defund the police or against it, but I understand that we're militarizing the police and giving them all kinds of toys. But are we giving them men's groups? Do they have support groups that need, must I say that they should probably be mandatory in that system, right? Mm-hmm. It should probably be mandatory that men sit in circle of the type that you and I are talking about, and that is funded for them, and that they go and they do sweat lodges, and they go on journeys together. They go to cabins and they have like a men's weekend where they're doing their work. Or maybe it doesn't need to be a men's thing. Maybe it's a mixed thing because there's female cops as well.
Sure.
But just that general, that vibe that you get in a circle of support, right. Are we giving that to cops, or do we think that they don't need it because they're a problem? That we're not getting it if that's our mentality. Yeah.
Yeah. It is a multifaceted issue. I said, I interviewed a cop right after George Floyd was killed, and my podcast editor fired me as a client because I did the interview. So it's like, wow. That's how intense the view is against cops. Yeah. Right. And yet the same guy who I just mentioned, my number two, Dave Boyd, was, as a cop, a guy tried to stab him and kill him, and then he ran into him a couple of years later and they connected. And actually, there's like a picture of them arm in arm, and it's a crazy story to hear, but you're like, no one's ever tried to stab me as a podcaster. No one's ever tried to stab me as a men's work guy, right? Like, it's just not in my reality. So you nailed it. We have to look at the whole situation differently, and we have to humanize it. I think this is what should happen. You know, you don't graduate from high school or college without doing a 2-day ride along with the cops. Like, this is what it's like. Or anybody, I am not pro defund the police at all. And think anybody who is, you get to do a 48-hour shift with the cops too and see what it's like and see what they go through. But then I will also say, as the culture of policing, I know a number of cops. I had a guy reached out, Ben, this was crazy, who said he was in a small whatever department, and he said to a couple of his cop friends, I've been meditating, and they just ridiculed him and tried to, he's like, what do I do? How do I, like, they're literally like, I'm now the office joke. They're calling me a pussy. They're making fun of me. I was like, for meditating, like, hey, you guys have suicide rates and addiction rates are off the charts, and you're attacking your own guy for meditating. Yeah. You guys also have an internal culture issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's that old style masculinity, right? That old stuff, all your problems, don't talk about anything, like just be tough. Put all the armor on. All the armor on.
Right.
Right. And you and I know that, like, the more armor you put on, the more wounding somehow you have and end up receiving. It's like,
yeah. And the less trauma gets to come out. No, it's just whatever you suppress is going to come out sideways for sure. But yeah, shout out to everybody. Shout out to everybody who's just doing the work and doing their best and is in the line of fire and is just not getting supported. I think that's the best way to put it for those guys. I'm like, man, that's why they always pick on firemen. They're like, everybody loves firemen. Like, if you ask the cops, they're like,
right? Yeah. They're jealous. Like, they're so jealous of firemen. They get a calendar. Like,
Everybody's excited to see them.
Right? Yeah. They're usually on scene first.
Right.
Right. Yeah. They're faster. Well, man, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think, you and I really, we hadn't even really gotten to know each other before our last talk. And so over these last two, it's been really good to understand who you are.
You as well, brother. You as well. Yeah. I appreciate you. Appreciate the work you're doing.
Great, man. Okay, so tell people how they can find you. It's tell us your podcast.
Sure. So the podcast is The Uncivilized Podcast. The book you are holding up, you can get at manuncivilized.com/the book. If you want it on Audible, it's on Audible, but I say get your hands on a copy because it's a unique thing to hold.
Yeah.
And it's so a beauty, cool. Huh?
It's such a beauty, man. Yeah.
I had a brilliant designer. And if you want to get a hold of me, I'm on Instagram at Traver Boehm. Although I'm trying to spend less and less time on there. Yeah.
I love it, man. I know, me too. It's like there's a, it's sort of a double-edged thing. It's like you want to get your messages out into social media because you know it actually reaches a lot of people, but it's like sometimes it's painful to engage with social media. So
for sure,
I love it, man. You're such a warrior. You're doing the work, and
thank you.
I really appreciate that you're just bringing such a grounded approach to men's work. I really feel like you're focusing on the right things. You go for the root, which I really appreciate. You're not so much focused on like, hey, let's teach you skills and like, here's some tips and tricks that I learned from all the seminars that I've been to in my life. It's like grounding, like the roots and the sky and then the circle around you, you know, like you've got it, man. You've got what's important. And, I love your message. I love your message, man. So
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for coming on the show, and we'll do this again.
Amen.